And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, Italy, grandmothers, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
We just gave it away. Mark, how's it going?
It's going great.
What's exciting you these days?
You know what? Green English peas are exciting me here these days. I had some English peas fresh just yesterday, and last week I had them in a ravioli, fresh peas and fresh spring carrots in a ravioli. Unbelievable. I feel like I'm eating spring every time I put one of those peas in my mouth.
And it's one of those novelties that I honestly, if I think of peas, I think of canned peas. In Germany, it's such a short growing time, or it was just not part of my childhood. I really like, I would associate fresh peas with something that is such a treat. And now, living in the San Francisco Bay Area, you do get fresh peas even at grocery stores. And I mean, between English peas, snap peas, and snow peas, the sweetness, the crunch, the way it feels in your mouth, it's an amazing little treat and vegetable. And you can have a little bag that you buy, right, for a dollar or two.
Which won't make it out of the store.
Right. But that's basically your lunch, or that's your snack throughout the day.
And absolutely.
Delicious.
Absolutely. I buy them in 1 pound bags.
And they're so fun to eat.
And very few of them ever get to the salad or to the pot.
Yes.
So what's going on? What are our listeners saying these days?
Oh, we got a great comment from Berlin, Germany, in English. And I actually followed up and found out Tanya is originally from San Diego, spending an entire year now in Germany to study there. But she wrote us originally, "Hello, I've been listening to your podcast of your show and love it. I live in Berlin, Germany, and often get inspired by people on your show, but then feel like it's hard for me to translate or access in my life here, which is quite far away from you. I was wondering if you know of any similar shows or programs that are offered in German. It would be nice to be able to get local inspiration and feel a little bit more connected to the organic community here. Thank you, Tanya." So, and you know, you and I talked about that. The organic community, we had some thoughts around that, is really a worldwide and yet local, wherever you are. That's the organic community, right? Mm-hmm. You had some great suggestions there.
Well, Mark, and when we were having our production meeting after we talked about this, our associate producer said, "Well, what about the person who lives next door to them? That's a great suggestion that Gina came up
with,
go have dinner, talk to your neighbor, go have dinner with somebody and get connected to your local food. I thought that was brilliant.
And as an American in Berlin, just the topic around food and being there and coming for what reason, and that's what starts the conversation. So rather than, in this case, Tanya, as we often do in the show, we don't want to say what you should be doing or what would be a good lead, but just expanding that, the world of possibility. I think you, Mark, said also farmers markets. I know they're, we call them Wochenmärkte in, not farmers or Bauernmärkte, but Wochenmärkte in Germany. It's the equivalent of a farmers market everywhere in Berlin, Hamburg. I mean, really throughout the country at this point, almost every day of the week in different districts, just like here in the Bay Area, rapidly growing, but really has been a tradition all my life. We saw this rapid growth over the last 10 years in the States, right, from 1,000 to now 6,000 past. My mom always shopped at a Wochenmarkt at least once a week or twice, getting fresh meat, knowing the butcher, saying hello, often already having the cuts ready for us. Very sweet. I don't know if they organized that or not, but so that's like part of extended family. That's great wherever you are. Go to the market and really be brave enough to just engage with the food producer and tell them where you are and what you're looking for, and their worlds to be discovered.
Yeah.
Very beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. We also had a comment all the way from Nepal, and it was so sweet and I was so touched, because all it says was, it's from Ram, Ram Atikari, and greetings to you and your farm in Nepal. It says, "We have an organic farm in Nepal. We also plant organic tea and coffee." There was no question. There was no comment on the show, but I thought it was so sweet. And so, Ram, if you listen to this, yes, we got it. And thank you for your comment. All the way to Nepal, our show is listened to, which is fantastic. and tell us more about your farm. We'll bring you back
and your coffee
the show
and your tea. And, maybe I'd love to try it.
Have you call in one day? So yes, community starts with us and the person next to us, which brings us pretty much right to today's show. We celebrated Mother's Month in May, in the beautiful month of May, and we're expanding this focus to grandmothers one generation further today, specifically cooking with Italian grandmothers. And we're excited about our guests today. More on that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned. This is an organic conversation. Back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about a beautiful new book, exceptionally beautiful, Cooking with Italian Grandmothers by Jessica Thoreau. Jessica, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having
me. Great to have you in the studio. Mm. And also with us is someone who grew up in Italy with his grandmother, who can add the life experience of today's show, Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza D'Angelo, a classic and true Italian restaurant in Mill Valley, California. Massimo, welcome.
Thanks.
Great to have you.
And he brought food, too.
Of course. It's like...
I know. When are we going to open that?
Yes. Yeah. So we're looking... It's funny, but yeah, I wonder if you go anywhere without food. It's so classic Italian. Yes, Massimo brought a big, beautiful white plate, huge white plate with... Massimo, what are...
It's antipasti.
It's antipasti. It's
like pecorino, little coppa meat, and soppressata.
Different kinds of meats and some cheeses.
Sweet
and,
and actually, the pecorino
is my favorite. We should dive in. That was this week's edition of
We're done.
Kind of conversation.
Thanks a lot.
No, but we wanted to pick up and look at the culture of Italian food as told through the generations. And this book, Jessica, again, it's gorgeous. As
thank you.
Food needs to be delicious and gorgeous, the way it's presented and the way it's eaten in company, and with a certain aesthetic to it, even though it's so simple often. And that leads us to the opening of your book.
Yeah, in the first line in the foreword, you talk about say that this book is about women, food, and listening.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about your journey and how women, food, and listening resonate throughout the book?
Yeah, well, the first thing that comes to mind is just how connected those Italian grandmothers were to the land and the seasons and their families. So literally, the daily meal was about slowing down and sort of paying attention to what was in the garden and what was ready to be harvested, and then, how the family was feeling, so how to prepare that food so that it would suit the mood. So that was something really big that I learned there, and definitely carries throughout the book. Then there's the obvious that it's a book of stories. So these are women that shared their lives and their stories with me, and they're told in the book. So mm-hmm. there's that as well.
And that's what made the recipes for me so much more inviting, because it was actually the story around the recipe and your photography. I mean, you're a beautiful writer and this is an amazing cookbook, but the photography isn't just food photography. It actually looks, because food photography is beautiful, but this looked as if I was actually attending the meal where you were.
Right.
When it was happening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that really was a different perspective for me.
Very uh-huh. close, intimate look into the culture much more. I mean, and with that, the recipes have a framework in which they are placed.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very beautiful and convincing. How did you win? What's the story behind it? How did you win people's trust to open their family picture book and give you a photo that is, 80 years old?
Yeah. Well, what's so funny is that this actually all began with something similar to Massimo's little antipasti platter. I received a grant through Brown University to make films about food traditions in Italy, and went to that interview with a team of deans with a platter of food. And, you know, everyone, all my friends were just shocked. They said, what are you doing? This is not going to go over well. And all of these deans were just thrilled to have the crostini. Yeah. You know, it was like the best move ever.
I wonder if food has ever not won over somebody.
I know. Yes.
Oh, you brought food? You're out of here.
I know. It's amazing. It opens all sorts of doors.
Sure.
So, you know, it went that way in Italy. I arrived. I had been given a whole big bundle of money and had the task of making films about food traditions. And so started with Mama Maria, who was a childhood au pair's mother, and then just sort of slowly began to follow referrals. So someone would say, oh, you have to meet my great-grandmother in the south of Italy, or I met someone on a plane and she sent me to an aunt that she knew. And
one degree of separation.
Yeah. I mean, so it sort of developed that so way. Fun. And I think they were all perplexed and curious as to why I was there. You know, this single young woman traveling around wanting to cook and eat and listen.
So it started with one contact, and it expanded after what, a year? How long did you?
I was there over a year, but close to a year.
And you left having discovered and made friends with an entire community of people that you did not know existed.
Uh-huh.
With this one entry that we had, bringing it back to the comment with Tanya of where to start in Berlin. Yes,
yeah,
it starts with the person sitting next to us in the plane.
Mm-hmm, exactly, literally. And Slow Food was also very instrumental for me. You know, I contacted Slow Food and they referred me to their Presidia producers. And so that added a little helpful boost.
Yeah, Slow Food International and Slow Food USA really making it a focus to celebrate food traditions and to bring us back again to that sense of food, much more than the meal itself, but to slowing down, to listening to the food, to the flavors, to the stories behind it.
The tradition.
Yes, the tradition. Beer. Massimo, can you relate? Once you know one Italian, you know Italy?
Yeah, I know.
Just
a little. But every time someone, I have a customer ask me about Italy, if you want to discover Italy, you need to go into a small town where you feel welcome. Well, you don't need, no, it's not important if you don't speak Italian, but they try help you. They try help you. You feel welcome in the house, in the dinner, and the lunch. And the grandmother, I like the book, Jessica, because grandmother is a big person in the family. And, it's the roots, the family.
She's sort of the glue as well. Keeps
it's
it all
maybe
together.
The blood.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's for me, my grandmother is my hero. It's my champion. So I grew up with her. And my family moved for 4 years in Switzerland. So every Sunday I call, you go, oh, my grandmother, last night I have a beautiful dream. So what's the dream? Oh, you make the meatball. So we talk about food, fusilli. Oh, I miss the fusilli. So.
Uh-huh.
And for my mom, grandmother is my name is Massimuccio. It's a small area. So if I'm old, Massimuccio.
A lot of Massimo.
Yeah.
And Jessica, so in your experience with talking to all these women, and did you find it the same thing as welcoming, and you just felt like that in your book, you talk a lot about how you're meeting these people and they just welcomed you right into their kitchen and as if you had known them forever, right?
Yeah, I mean, it did work that way. And I think Massimo's point of going to the small towns is a really important one. Mama Maria is the only woman in the book that's in a city, and the rest were sort of in small towns. Some of them sharecroppers, farmers, you know, and so there was a sense of my arriving and them being so proud that they had something to offer.
Yeah,
which is it's an important part of life. Why is that? Can we explore that for just a second? Is it because in larger cities there are so many influences that we stop listening, that the knowledge and tradition that is held by the elders is kind of overlooked, and it's about the new and the fast? And life in a small town usually is much more slower and less influenced by outside. Is that the simple reason? It seems like the age is not revered in cities. And when you come to a small town, as you said,
Massimo.
A small
town is completely different
time. It's a different day.
It's go very slow, the time, and it's different tradition. It's a real tradition, but the day. So you have the coffee together, you have, the lunch is very, and the dinner together. So it's so much tradition that you know in the city. One nice story I want to tell you is the time I live in Acre. It's a small town in Calabria. So every time I saw the commercial about the tomato, they go, who buy this? because we produce the tomato, no, for the make the sauce, no, each family, no, like, yeah. They crazy. Like, who buy this tomato?
Who's gonna buy
that? So the time I move in Rome, like, oh, now I understand who buy.
That's great.
Yeah. So same for my grandmother, just for the. I think it's same for Maria. For they retired, you know, they have a small social security retirement. Pension, and for my grandmother, is they use just $3 a week, because the only thing she bought is a Saturday, is the mortadella that she no produce, because she produce everything. She have the rabbit, she have the chicken, and she produce the veggie, and you eat just with seasonal.
So what was your mother's role in that? Did she go off and work and you were actually raised by your grandmother?
Because my father, my mother stay in Switzerland. I stay with my grandmother. So they all my, and two more sisters. So my sister, I wanted the bistecca. And my grandfather said, oh, don't worry, tonight you have a white bistecca. Because it's not much money for the bistecca, but we have not the lardo. So this is the bistecca. But so we go up with in the morning, you know, my grandmother go in the land. No, so and for me, it's I like the time is we need to put the water from the plant, because I like to be a fire. So the water for everybody.
And it's, it sounds very similar to Carlucha, the woman that I filmed in Calabria. There's a film of her on my website, cookingwithitaliangrandmothers.com. And it's like, I think that it's also very special in Calabria, what you're describing, these traditions.
So,
are.
And it's so nice, the crazy, the connection. We have the pig. No? So my grandmother need to feed the pig. So every time we need to walk, we walk together. Like, Nonna, I don't want to go to the pig. And my grandmother said, why? I don't want to go. So she stopped. Every time she stopped, it's okay, we come back home. By the time we start walk, it's maximum, but I think the pig died if he will not feed. So she always is
gentle, yes, and sweet. Gently educated you or taught you how to take responsibility.
So I never saw so much sweetness in the
Jessica. For you, how was your upbringing? And actually, we should do a mini reset. You're listening to an organic conversation. I'm so fascinated by this story.
It's a conversation.
You're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we're talking about a great and beautiful, beautiful new book, Cooking with Italian Grandmothers, by Jessica Thoreau. And also with us in the studio is Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza D'Angelo in Mill Valley, California. Jessica, talking about upbringing, how were you raised? What inspired you to pick Italy and meet dozens of grandmothers for a year and be in their company to learn and study?
Well, you know, I was raised in London, and so I was raised in a big city, and we had an Italian au pair, Graziella, whose mother is Mamma Maria. And so my sister and I would spend summers with her. So that was a huge influence.
In Italy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very sick as a child with digestive problems and ended up choosing to use diet and herbs. I sought the counsel of a nutritionist and an herbalist when I was about 10 and weaned myself off of what was supposed to be a lifelong regime of intense medication. So I was cooking, you know, so it's like here I had this experience with Italy as a young child, and then I was sort of forced to cook for myself from the age of 10. And, you know, that was a really, really big blessing in a lot of ways. It brought me to farms to learn how to farm. It brought me to ultimately to Italy in a way, because I'd been doing so much healing foods cooking that I wanted to know about how food is more than just that, how food is pleasure and it's past and it's community and it's love. And so Italy was the obvious place to go. And ultimately grandmothers were the best people to learn that from, because that's absolutely what they embody. more than anyone I've ever met.
On that note, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back with more on cooking with Italian grandmothers. Stay tuned.
Mambo Italiano, hey Mambo, Mambo Italiano, go, go, go. You mixed up Siciliano, all you Calabrese do the Mambo like a crazy with a...
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about a beautiful new book, Cooking with Italian Grandmothers by Jessica Thoreau. With us in the studio also is Chef Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza D'Angelo, a classically true Italian restaurant in the beautiful town of Mill Valley, California.
So, Jessica, before the break, you had brought something up that really hit a nerve with me. I've been in the organic industry and buying from local growers for 30 years, and I can remember many times where people would come in and it only could be organic, and it only could be this, or it only could be that. And they were so rigid in their thought process. And I could have had a case of peaches that just came in. They were warm from the tree that all of a sudden, and it was like, you're turning this down. Mm-hmm. I'm just giddy because I have this and I tasted and there's juice all over my chin and I want to share this with you. And yet you can't find the space to share with me because of something.
Well, it's reduced to a product rather than an experience, right? Mm-hmm. And Jessica, yeah, please.
Yeah, and often, you know, how we think about healthy eating is reduced to a regime rather than the experience of
and
being in a body.
And that's right.
Right. So it's really key, and it's a main thing that I learned there and I went there for was, you know, to learn about how there's so much more and that health is actually so much more, that it encompasses, you know, whatever is available and wonderful and how it's prepared with love and the experience of being with people in a joyful way around the table. I mean, these are all really essential, beautiful
so
things.
So you got a grant from Brown uh-huh. University to document the culture of Italian cooking in the through the lens of grandmothers. Mm-hmm. You spent over a year touring all of Italy, mm-hmm. basically, right? Being
yeah.
handed from one contact into the next without actually having charted out how you would spend the year.
Right.
What's the key finding that you brought home with? Like, what's huh. the, how beyond the beautiful project and the beautiful book, but what will be your cellular memory now that you will carry for the rest of your life?
Well, the main thing that stands out is just trusting the process and sort of trusting what I'm drawn to. Brown was very daring in that
trusting
they said,
yourself.
Yeah, trusting myself. You know, they said, go have a good process. We don't care about a product. And that was exciting and also terrifying.
Where can I apply for a grant?
I know, right? kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, we do that after the show, but I do want the name and number of that person.
Yeah,
that's so wise. That's exactly why we're doing things, right?
Yeah, and that at the time, process. You know, it might not make a ton of sense logically, but that ultimately things come together in ways that are more magnificent than one could have dreamed of.
And unpredictable, really.
And completely unpredictable.
Yeah, the tool, even though we set the intention, mm-hmm. even though that's questionable, but then we're in life, and life happens, mm-hmm. right? Massimo, back to that rigid, often soul or spirit killing mentality that we sometimes experience, where it does come down to, you know, does this product or this piece of whatever it may mean check the 20 things that we put on it, rather than saying, well, this pig has lived with my family for 3 years.
Yeah.
This is how we killed. How, when you grew up, everything was organic by default.
Everything's organic, and my grandfather prepared the land, so mm-hmm. the pig is for the land. So we use everything. So it's nothing left over.
Right.
So it's a lot of work before for prepare the land. So it's a lot of routine in all year. So we not think about think everything's organic. It's, the world's organic don't make much sense for us. It's just a joke. This tomato is good. That's it.
Yeah. So the Italian answer to organic is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something the small town make organic. They move the everything and the big. For this, we have now slow food. And for this here in Marin County, if you look, what Marin Organic, if I think about Star Route, the big vision about started the 74 about be organic. I think the 74, a lot of people think this is crazy.
Yes.
So and
we had Warren Weber from Star Route Farms, the oldest continuously certified organic farm in the state of California. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he started on a few acres, people thought, "What are you doing?
Yeah.
Lettuce on 5 acres mm-hmm. organic? Yeah. You can't survive."
You need to think of what happened. So in my family, it's the culture of the land. No, I think mm-hmm. the whole family in the small town, and it's something is make it rich. Not just you bought, make it rich. Mind, because you have a different same. Your mouth is different. We born we know the flavor, but the onions, mm-hmm. no, the sure. leeks, and same with my daughter. I cook every night because I like it. Because it's something she improved the tasting. So,
mm-hmm.
Now if I buy some. I don't know if it's called like the plasmon. She don't want. She completely refuse because no have the complete flavor. So
right.
I think we have a big impact for your whole child and for in the community. I'm a chef and I have a big commitment with my community because they come here inside and they trust me. I use organic food. Mm-hmm. So
sure, yes.
If I want to play, but it's no.
Yeah, I was talking with Mark about my experience, and specifically in the Swiss Alps, as a child spending summers there. You know, there's a meal that's called Brotzeit. It's the German translation into English would be bread time. It's actually all you eat is butter, a really really hard salami, and a big loaf of bread that you have in your backpack.
Yeah,
and the bread is so thick that you, when you have it in your backpack, you can actually rest your head on it, so that that backpack becomes your nap sack. That's how it started, right?
Literally
your nap sack.
Americans, you know, being as sporty as they are, they call it backpack because we carry it, the pack on the back. For us in Germany, it's a knapsack, meaning the bread inside is your pillow. It's a pretty brilliant way of, you know, it's rolled into cotton cloth, which becomes your napkin.
Yeah.
Or your tablecloth.
When and your pillowcase.
And your pillowcase, in a way, inside, though. But yes.
Exactly.
It's true, Helge. You need, the land is, the farm is 1 hour far away where
that's
you
right.
live.
Yes.
Yeah. So
and you hike, you can take.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have, the cheese, the salami, and the wine, too. Yeah,
I
forgot the wine. Oh, Massimo, you blew my cover.
Okay, we'll go tomorrow.
Yeah, you blew my cover. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Fulcain.
And we're talking about the culture of Italian cooking and a beautiful new book, Cooking with Italian
Grandmothers. And, Helge, on that point, we've got all these amazing... what do you call them? Energy bars that you like. People will load up on energy bars and go take a hike. And I was just thinking when you were describing that, I was thinking here's the difference in that is you buy some energy bars and you go out hiking and you can eat and keep kind of going.
Yeah.
But if you have a loaf of bread and some cheese and some salami and you open up your knapsack, then it's a completely different experience because then you're stopping.
And why is that? I don't understand
and
why.
And you're participating. Mm-hmm. For a moment, you're actually slow. You're slowing down and participating for a moment in whatever food that was that's in your backpack, as simple as it is.
I mean, I would go as far as really believing that the cotton cloth that the bread is kind of wrapped into, when you put it on the table, a little bit takes up the flavor of the table.
Yeah.
It takes up the wood of the table that, for 300 years, people have stopped at to eat.
Yeah, sometimes it's the leftover, the frittata smells, the night
that's
before.
That's right, exactly. There's some fat on the table, whatever. These are public camping tables, but they have been there literally for 150 plus years and at amazing spots. So you sit there, you look at the sharp, still green, lush valleys that then turn into granite, and you look at the Alps at their sharpest with 200-mile visibility. You put your tablecloth or the bread cover on the table, it picks up that little bit of fat or cheese or whatever was there before that wasn't quite clean. And after 7 days of hiking in the Alps, that cloth has every scent of flavor of the world of the Alps, of every town in it. And with it, it gets transferred to the bread. So you actually literally become a walking piece through the ecology of that landscape. Hmm. And so then, yeah. What's there to
enough
add?
Said.
enough said. So when we have an energy bar, yes, it again comes down to the product. And I love them. When I go hiking in the High Sierra, and you do need, food that
energy,
keeps you fueled for 3 days. And it would be weird, actually, to bring a loaf of bread and a piece of cheese and a salami in the States into the High Sierra. And I don't know why that's so different there. Mm-hmm. It would be weird to bring an energy bar in Italy.
Yeah, it's the same
how you travel.
I work in Cortina. We have
old
stuff.
In the Alps.
Yeah,
yes.
In the kitchen we go for the beiding, and we bring, we make like a cake, and we make sure that the night we come back, we have a beautiful soup. Mm-hmm. So, this is the more rich, I think the best because you need something more rich.
Substance.
So we make it a little bit with a little bit pancetta, also so nice. I still, I think this is
the, he's smiling as he
said. I know.
And we heard that.
This is the nice memory, So, this is the organic living the land. I think Jessica. What he did with this book showed the land, showed the people living inside the land and the time. Mm-hmm.
And Jessica, you were nodding when I described those. What are some of those experiences that you had where you found, without knowing, that a week later that cloth smelled like the entire landscape or something like that, where you realized after, wow, there was more to learn that I saw in that second?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... the whole culture of bread making is a huge one traditionally in Italy. And there's one woman in the book, Raffaella, who is a bread maker, and she has this incredible story of her husband died and left her with all of these children, a widow. And there was a tradition in that Calabrian town of the scrap of sourdough being passed around between the village women. And in that, no one had to bake bread more than every couple of weeks, and everyone had fresh bread every day. And so she went back and she found this sourdough and she revived it and she's baking it over and over again in this sort of historic little place. And I think that that's another way in which, with foods like that, naturally fermented foods, I mean, it's just sort of a different example, but the culture and the fragrance of the air and the water and the people that pass through, it's all taken up by the food. It's this very living thing that changes over time with the people that are using it.
I mean, you're literally passing on the culture, but you're also figuratively passing on the tradition and culture of that household to the next in a small way, right?
Yeah.
It's the community. We talked before with Mark, but in the 60s, in the 70s, you know, in Calabria, you don't celebrate too much the beer. It's the reunion for the families. The time is you pick up the harvest, the grapes, or you kill the pig.
Yeah, you were saying that. So there are two main family.
Yeah,
everyone
reunion.
Comes together. Even if you're in the city, you work there, you come home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
two,
yeah.
right? One is the grape harvest.
Yeah, one is the pig.
And the pig is in, you said, in December or so?
Yeah, December to until end of January, February, you know. It needs to be cold, you know.
Right. So when they harvest the pig, it stays cold. And it's also the winter time. You want more substance food.
So it's so nice because it starts from the 5 o'clock in the morning. So they prepare the water, you know, for cleaning the pig. So the time of the water is warm. So it's okay, it's time for bring the pig. So here start the tradition. So after, you know, it's like the pig is the work for the men is almost over. So start the play card.
No? The afternoon.
Play scopa. So, but it's so nice because the wife and the kids, they start have two different team.
Right.
One is
for
cleaning the interior,
the
pig.
Men kill it and half it, and then the women go in.
And exactly. And now it's time, no, it's two team. The woman, one cleaning the interior for the next day for make the salsiccia. And another is just take the cheeks from the pig and make the sugo and make the fresh pasta. Because in the time, they don't buy the pasta. We need to understand this. My grandmother have a little beef flour. No, she have it's a nice story. I wonder just, they grow the grain. So the time they bring to the molino, so they have no money. They have a certificate. So you have 50 kilo a year for you. So my grandmother every 2 weeks go there and we take 5 pounds for them make the pasta. So it's everything.
And did she
do
it just with flour and water?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and my grandmother it's so nice have this wood fire for make the bread, and there they make the community because the time is Pasqua. No, they make the cookies and everything. It's the whole community. So for 1 week, my grandmother, from the morning to the end of the night, just send this food. But it's not just for her. It's for the whole family. Mm-hmm. So they help each other. So this is why we still think about how the Italy is maybe it's a lot of this occupation, but they own the big investment is they have the house. This is the...
Right.
So nice.
Beautiful. Jessica, you were... can you talk about that and the simplicity of what you discovered? Because it's simply, salt, water, and flour is it, right?
Often I mean, it sounds very, very similar to Carluccio, one of the women I made the film about. And, similarly, the only thing that they didn't grow that they used were salt, sugar, and coffee beans. And everything else they did off of the land. And she would take her flour and just water and spend hours making filet.
Jessica, the good thing about my grandmother, she helped for the repair the mascot. So because she no want the money, everybody, they know this, bring or coffee or sugar. So my grandmother passed away in 97. After 4 years and all, my mom called me, the coffee is expensive.
because
she never bought the coffee.
Yeah. That's so sweet. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Bouquet.
And we're with us in the studios, Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza De Angelo in Mill Valley, California, one of those true Italian restaurants featuring local farm-to-table organic ingredients, and the author Jessica Thoreau of a beautiful, beautiful new book, Cooking with Italian Grandmothers. Stay tuned. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Frei Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frei never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frei organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frei Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freiwine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about a beautiful new book, Cooking with Italian Grandmothers by Jessica Thoreau. And as the title suggests, it is as beautiful as the title may suggest. Gorgeous photos. And Jessica, we want to dive into that a little bit more of what people will see when they buy the book. And also with us is Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza De Angelo, a tried and true Italian restaurant in the beautiful town of Mill Valley, California. But Mark, I do want to start with you. We talk about childhood memories. I shared the one backpacking in the Swiss Alps. And you are a foodie as much as they come as foodies. I don't even like that term, but you have been involved in food for all or most or all of your life. What was your childhood like? I never asked you that.
Well, my childhood was, my mom was a Midwest cook. And so she learned that she needed to cook everything really, really well. And so she always...
Like well as in it's really delicious or well through?
Well as in well cooked. And bless her heart, we always had a meal on the table and I loved eating everything. I learned more
that
about...
That was your mom, not your grandmother.
That was my mom. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents were from the farm in Iowa. And I remember one childhood memory I remember was milking a cow on my uncle's farm in Iowa. And I remember milking it and it was like, oh, that's easy. And I went over it and tried milking the cow and it was like, this really isn't so easy. And he said, all you have to do is fill up that bucket right there. And until you get the technique down, obviously, you don't get the rhythm or you don't really get a lot of milk
before
out of
the cow
teats.
Kicks the bucket.
Yeah. And then so I said, well, forget this. And I started walking behind the cow and my uncle said, if you ever walk behind that cow again while someone's milking it, you won't have a leg because if it kicks, it'll shatter your leg. But he said, come back here and show me. And so then I got to drink this milk with this fat on top of it for the whole rest of the time. Yeah. And all the kids would run to the breakfast table because they wanted to get that fat off of that
warm
milk.
From the udder.
Warm milk. It was just, I remember it vividly.
Yeah, me too.
How about you?
Yeah, I've been there. I can taste right now what milk from the udder, freshly milked, tastes like. But it does remind me of, we had a great show about a year ago with Dario Cecchini, one of those famous, arguably the most famous butcher in the world. 13 generations in his family of being a butcher. So the genetic tradition and what the knowledge he has on meat cutting, and he says he celebrates life every day the way he butchers. So a beautiful show. He came to the Bay Area. He was live here in the studio for an event at Cavallo Point in Marin County over the Golden Gate Bridge, and he cooked lardo, and I'm sure Massimo can relate. Lardo, the Italian word, the translation for lardo for me is no fear, because it's basically one pile of fat.
And it's, lardo, yeah.
Yes. And all the guests we had, all Americans, you know, fat conscious, we couldn't believe what we were watching. It's like 3 pounds of fat cooked into a meal with some salt and some spices, and that was basically it. It was so fatty that when he opened the oven, the fire alarm got triggered. And everyone had to leave. And we're talking, Cavallo Point is a big lodge. We're talking hundreds of people, including the entire kitchen staff. Everyone had to leave the buildings for the firefighters, even though we knew it was the lardo. The firefighters had to do what they do to check the building. But I'll never forget that moment when that's why I think lardo, the Italian translation, is no fear.
Again, and the lardo, no. Usually, for sure, I saw in your book, no, they melted the lardo for make the, they use for make the cookies. Mm-hmm. The buconotti. This is a traditional.
What's that? What's the?
It's a sweetness. Buconotti is like a muffin, Italian muffin. No, and we.
I didn't try it.
Oh, we need to make.
But lardo is the is the belly fat and the fat of the pig, right?
Yeah, because exactly. they don't have a butter. They don't use margherita.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly. They use the lardo for make the.
Yeah, even on bread, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's
but also bread. To bake with.
Yeah, for bake. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And what I like about the book, Jessica, is about it's a simple recipe. Mm-hmm. So in what you learn about your grandmother is about cook with little, mm-hmm. too much.
Which, and make it taste really good.
Which is perfect. Thank you, Massimo. So let's talk about Jessica. When it's a gorgeous book. It includes not just recipe, as Mark said in the beginning, but really sets the framework for... Why the recipe, for how, for what it means, right? What was addressed mm-hmm. through that recipe? Because it's not just that somebody said, this is delicious. It had a function in that time of the year when it mm-hmm. was used. So can you guide us on the air, little visual guide of what mm-hmm. people, how do you structure it and why?
So it's structured according to the women that I met and sort of follows that journey. So each chapter is divided according to a different woman and begins with a quote or something that she said that sort of epitomized her type of cooking. Giovanna, for example, said, "The kitchen is for passion." She was impregnated out of wedlock and spent the rest of her life sort of in the kitchen cooking for her family and her son. And, you know, her foods were like wonderful sweets and rich pastas, and sort of is like that. Each woman's cooking kind of reflects back to what was essentially like her statement
the
about
expression.
Food and life.
Yeah.
So it's divided according to women. There are 12 women in the book, and each chapter begins with stories about the woman and what I learned from her. And then there's a separate section at the end of the chapter with the recipes. I did all the photographs there.
So you asked them for their favorite 3, 4, or 5 recipes that express them the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we cook together. So, and you know, as is true with many grandmothers, and especially Italian grandmothers, they didn't have measurements really.
Yeah,
so
that's what I was asking.
Really,
there's no recipe where they say, "Oh, today we'll do this."
I know.
No, they just start throwing things, and you keep writing, right?
And luckily, I was filming the entire time,
oh,
so
right.
I have hundreds of hours of footage, and I could go back and be like, "How much was that in her hand?" And then, you know, really develop.
How big is her
the
hand?
Resin.
So one pinch of salt is about Wow, beautiful. And so the photos in the book are all taken by you. Some of them look like old family tradition photos, but literally you took all of them. It's not that they, as I said in the beginning, opened their family album.
They opened their recipes.
Their hearts.
Their recipes.
Yeah,
their hearts.
Their recipes. And so it's not just the book, as you just said. There is footage on your website, beautiful website, cookingwithitaliangrandmothers.com. What's the final project now? It seems like this is just the starting point, and you can take it anywhere. I mean, this is, you know, you can bring people to the same trip that you were on, visiting some of those as an eco-travel or cultural travel experience. You have all this amazing footage, hundreds of hours. What is your website featuring, and where do you see this evolving into?
Well, the website now shows the entire book online, so people can really dive in and look at it if they're interested. And it also shows one of the films. The next project is to finish the other three films. About the other three are about Daria in Liguria and Armida, an old sharecropper, and then Mary, who's a Tuscan.
So those are chapters from your book
in
film?
They are chapters. So each film depicts a different woman and my time cooking with her. The one on the website is Carluccia, who's from Calabria.
So are we looking at a 12-series PBS
feature
coming up soon?
So yeah, I'm thinking about TV, and I'm thinking about more books. And
if you need money, there's the Brown University.
Exactly.
They don't care what
you look like. You know what's so amazing is, you know, they said, oh, we don't need a product, but I really wanted to give them a product. So about a year ago, I went to them and I said, I have this book for you. It's done. And they were thrilled. And then they said, you know, we discontinued the grant, so please keep quiet, you know, in terms of with Brown students.
Yeah, glad we're not on the air, you know, and people don't. Yeah, keep quiet. That's good.
No, keep
so
quiet
that's
when,
out now.
Yeah, when talking to students.
Sure. Yeah, of course. So no students.
Not advertising the name of the grant.
Yes, good. Mm-hmm. But it does allow you to follow up on your footage, on your documentary work, on making it a series, multi-part series.
Yeah, and there are other projects I'm looking at.
And this just came out, so you're on a book tour too, right?
I am.
They are upcoming. We're now in June. Mm-hmm. What's coming up next? Is that on your website as well?
Yeah, everything's on the website. I'm at the IACP Awards in the beginning of June, and so.
And what is that?
The International Association of Culinary Professionals. I'm nominated for the Julia Child Award.
Congratulations!
Yeah.
And well deserved that nomination. Yeah.
How can we chime in, or is that there's a jury, right? That will
there's a jury. Okay. I think that it's
we'll just send him the show.
Yeah.
So I just was wondering, you know, when I was reading about Irene, her approach is you welcome whatever arrives, and then you listen closely and nourish well. Uh-huh. And in this whole conversation, that is almost like a theme.
Yeah, please repeat that, because if people don't have the book in front of them, I think it's really the essence. Hold on a sec. Just want to set the frame for that. It's really the essence, not just of the show, but of life itself, right? Mm-hmm. If that's your philosophy, you'll have a good chance to have a good life. Mm-hmm. I think it's so beautiful. Please.
And I bet Massimo's 97-year-old grandmother had this philosophy.
Absolutely.
But, but what Irene's approach was, you welcome whatever arrives, and then you listen closely and nourish well.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she is amazing.
So sweet.
And, you know, a gestalt psychotherapist and a wonderful cook and active in local politics and a teacher. And, you know, she's quite Buddhist without necessarily intending to be so. It's just the sort of way of life. Yeah. And it's very Italian, you know.
I think it's nice if here in California, United States, we start to bring a whole child in the farmer's market.
Yes.
If we spend a little bit of time, not just for go for the baseball game, but for go on the land. We know very well Helge with Marine Organic, you know, opened the farm to the people.
Yes.
And it's something nice project, and it's whether you building the sense of the community, whether you make more sensibility the time you go in the store, because it's everything starts from the food.
Yeah, and that brings us actually back to Warren Weber. I met with him from Star Route, who we mentioned earlier in the show, who has a farmer's market booth at the Ferry Plaza building here in San Francisco. And he was saying the age, and he was making a joke and saying maybe just because I got older, but the age of farmer's market shoppers is getting younger and younger. They're now 14, 15, 16-year-olds that do the shopping for the family that maybe have grown up being taught by their parents, but it seems that culture is absolutely re-emerging. Mm-hmm. Is that your experience too, Jessica, coming back after a year in Italy, mm-hmm. coming back here? What were you? When did you come back? What was your...
I came back in 2005.
So the last 5 years, 6 years, have seen a dramatic change in awareness and eco-literacy.
Yeah, all over, and especially sort of beginning in the Bay Area. I think that it's really important, you know, in cultures and countries such as, you know, what they have in Italy, it's sort of normalized that the kid would be in the kitchen, lending a hand, helping out.
Tasting, yeah.
Yeah, watering the plants. And so...
Feeding the pig, even though you're
Exactly. Feeding the pig begrudgingly. Yeah, you know, but it creates a strong sense of flavor and taste, like you were describing with your daughter, Massimo. And I think that the more that we can offer that to children,
it's so nice. It's not about the grandmother, the grandfather, your father, your mother need the teaching you cook. It's something that this is coming later. No, I never cook with my grandmother, but I saw the style and I never forgot. She have this simple recipe, just potato and olive oil with chili powder. And it's coming to my culinary experience, but the flavor is and the experience stay on the table. So this is something that we need. We have a big responsibility about the whole child, because it's where really we make the community. Mark talked very well about this before, and I saw with Elger, I moved here 2001. The farmers market is just flour and star route. That's it. Mm-hmm. Now we have a lot of. A lot of ranch, a lot of farm, a lot of beautiful, the cheese maker. It's amazing. I'm so proud to use, I'm Italian restaurant, but I use cheese from Pentaluma, Ponderace. So we use, I have the Italian technique, but I love so much the product we produce now here.
Yeah.
So the variety, I know in Calabria this variety about the vegetable. So
yeah, once we rediscover culture, it seems to resonate with us. It reminds us of who we are so much that, once remembered, we won't let it go until, you know, we let it go again, and then we need to remember again. But your book does help with that. Thank you.
And you know, I started with peas, and I was wondering what each of you are welcoming to your table right now.
And we're almost out of time.
Yeah, so real quick.
What's your June experience, Massimo? What are you featuring in June at the restaurant? What's your favorite food right now?
I received yesterday the Fister Lom tomato. So zucchini blossom, Lom tomato from Cape Aria. This is the best part of my...
Yeah,
it's so nice to go in the kitchen with a different color.
What we learn, I think, with
the book Jessica, and what we learn now is about they change the style of the restaurant. Uh-huh. Now the people go more simple.
Yeah, yes. They want more homey sort of grandmother.
Jessica, what's your favorite simple recipe in?
Well, I'm thinking about strawberries a lot right now.
I'm doing a demo this
afternoon at the Italian Cultural Institute about the strawberries and wine.
Fantastic.
And we will dive into the cheese and the sausage, and we are out of time. Thank you, Massimo, for bringing that. Jessica Thoreau, the author of Cooking with Italian Grandmothers, also .com. Check out the footage there and the book tour that Jessica is on. Thanks for coming to the studio. And Massimo Covello, the chef at Piazza De Angelo in Mill Valley, California. Beautiful show. Thanks for sharing your stories. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks again to our guests today.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Gina Rastani.
For blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. So please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up next is Beth Greer and Your Supernatural Life, a great show right after An Organic Conversation, so stay tuned. We're your hosts, Helge Helberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Bye-bye.
Sensation of my generation. I'm just talking about my generation.